WHAM proudly welcomes you to Soundbites. This is America's longest-running computer show. Call the show now, 222-1180. The Choice 1 toll-free line, 1-800-295-1180. Or star 1180, a free call for Verizon Wireless subscribers. Now, here's Nick Francesco, Dave Enright, and Steve Ray on News Radio 1180, WHAM.
Elvis has left the building.
I guess he's out in the forest now.
Yeah, really. But in his place, we have Soundbites, your computer user group of the air. I'm Nick Francesco.
I'm Dave Enright.
And I'm Steve Ray.
And over there is Rob Linton on the buttons, and we're taking your calls on computers. But before we get to those phones, we are going to talk a little bit about the news, and we'll start with the Macintosh news. Steve?
Yes, we had some good news this week from Quark. They finally released their version 5 of Quark Express, which is probably the premier desktop publishing layout program used in the ad agency industry. Unfortunately, the bad news is it's not native for OS X yet. So it actually maybe a few more months, if not longer, before the OS X version comes out, because they're going to work on the foreign language versions next. So this is actually a pretty good opportunity for Adobe, who released InDesign for OS X a couple weeks ago at Macworld, to get a foot in ahead of Quark, because Quark is, like I said, the premier program, and InDesign has been trying to fight with them for a couple years since they initially released it. So it's going to be interesting to see how many people bother upgrading to Quark 5 until the OS X version comes out, because Apple's trying to push everyone into OS X now. So it's going to be interesting to watch what happens.
Interesting. In the hardware front, we have some possible good news.
This is really cool.
Yeah, I'm looking forward
to
this.
It's over in Germany that this is being done, but what they're trying to do is come up with a photo cell that will fit into either laptops or your cell phones. A photo cell is an electrochemical device that produces electrical power from either hydrogen or alternative fuels such as methane, propane, butane, or natural gas. Say that fast, fight it down.
Yeah.
But what it's going to mean, folks, is instead of throwing these fuel cells out, you can have them recharged. And, oh, by the way, they'll last a lot longer.
Yeah, rather than a typical battery, which you push electricity into and then it uses it up, the fuel cell actually generates electricity.
More electricity, and you'll get more power. You know, that's the biggest thing right now in laptops, and how much power they suck up that, you know, oh, maybe I can get with this power pack, and I throw in another power pack, and I might get 4 hours on it. Well, with these fuel cells, will be able to go a lot longer and be more durable.
And if they use hydrogen, then the waste products are hydrogen and water.
Yeah.
You know, of course, having something in a computer that produces water might be bad, but we'll see how it goes.
Plus, they're rechargeable, too. I mean, they can sit there and recharge them, unlike batteries, which wind up filling up in a landfill.
That's a big thing.
Mm-hmm.
For those of you who are ICQ users, AOL owns AIM, as you know, the AOL Instant Messenger. You may not know. They also own ICQ. They are one of the many things that AOL surprisingly owns. However, there is a remotely exploitable buffer overflow glitch. This poses a risk for ICQ users. There is a security fix available. Attackers who are able to exploit the vulnerability may be able to execute code with the privileges of the victim's user. So if you're running a machine that you own and you're running ICQ on it, somebody may be able to own your machine. This exploit is not widely distributed yet. Not a lot of the script kiddies know about it. Script kiddies are people who are not bright enough to write their own viruses, but are bright enough to follow a set of directions written by somebody else, not unlike a well-trained rhesus monkey. However, since ICQ has 122 million users, the vulnerability is a concern. What you want to do is get the latest version. If you have 2001, 2001A, or prior, you are vulnerable. So if you upgrade to 2001B, which is currently in beta but is extremely stable, that will solve the problem. So you ICQ users, that's the thing to go for. We're going to go to the phones now at Soundbites. And our first caller, Philip from Rochester. Welcome, Philip. What's your question?
I'm running Windows 98, and every time whether it's on the internet or like if I open up Microsoft Outlook and I scroll through something, all of a sudden my whole computer freezes.
Only when you're on the internet?
Well, no, mainly, that's most time that I've noticed it, but if I open up Microsoft Outlook, and anytime I guess when I'm scrolling through information, the whole computer freezes up.
What do you have running in the sys tray?
See, I'm sort of new at this kind of thing.
That's down in the lower right-hand corner.
Down by the clock.
Down by the clock.
Yeah, I see that. I have WinZip open, Quick WinZip, but I can close that. Even when all that's closed, it still freezes up on me.
It sounds like you've got one of two problems. It may be a memory problem. It is more likely a video card problem.
Whenever
you're scrolling in. Now, it's one of two things. If it's a memory problem, all you can do is replace the memory.
Or add more if you don't have enough already.
You may not have enough, but if it's freezing, it's likely a problem.
Okay.
If it's the video, it's one of two things. It's either the memory on the video card or it's the driver.
Okay.
Now, the easiest thing to do is to replace the driver, and that's generally free, so you might want to try that first.
Or lower the resolution that he's doing. If he's doing 32-bit colors, move it down to 16-bit colors, or if you're doing 16, try 256. The drivers that are written for that card might not be very stable for the resolution you're trying to push.
Right. Okay. If you've got, if you're trying the highest end of colors and the highest end of the number, the number of pixels across the size of the screen.
Okay. Well, I'm here now. I'm looking. So I'm just looking at settings.
Yeah.
It's running at 256 with just the next line above the 800 by 600 pixels.
Try taking it down to 800 by 600. You might be right on the edge there. I mean, most drivers are written for 640 by 480, 800 by 600, and 1024 by 768. Now, if you're going in between that, that might be enough that the driver is having troubles handling that resolution. So bump it right to 800 by 600.
To the less of the more.
No, put it right on 800 by 600.
Go a little bit less. See what happens. It may be that you need a new driver. It may simply be that your video card is not designed to handle what you're doing.
Okay, I have a Compudyne monitor.
Okay.
Where would I find the driver for that?
It's not the monitor, it's the video card.
Yeah.
Oh, okay.
And
how do I know which one to get and where to go for it?
There you go. Well, what you want to do is it should be able to display somewhere in there the information about what kind of video card you have.
Usually on boot up, it'll display what type of video card is in your system.
Okay, I'll look for that.
The first thing you see when you go from a cold boot.
Okay.
You'll see something like, Trident video card, SG3, 4 meg RAM, that kind of thing.
And how do I pause that to get it?
Just hit the pause button.
The instant you see that, hit the pause button.
Okay.
And then you'll be able to write that down, and then you'll be able to go see if there's a better driver for that. It also may be that if you have only a 2-meg video card, you can't do a lot more.
Okay.
You might be looking at replacing the card to get higher resolution.
Okay, well, thanks, guys. Hopefully this will work out for me.
Let us know.
I hope so. We're going to take a quick break. We'll be back in just a couple of minutes with Dave Enright, Steve Ray, Rob Linton on the buttons, and me, Nick Francesco, on Sound Bites. Only on 1180 WHAM.
Welcome back to America's longest-running computer show, Sound Bites, on News Radio 1180 WHAM. Got a computer question? Call the boys at 222-1180. The Choice One toll-free line at 1-800-295-1180. Or star 1180, a free call for Verizon Wireless subscribers. Now, here's Nick Francesco.
The boys.
You get a nice backbeat on that one, but where is the melody? All right. We're back. It's Sound Bites. We're taking your calls with the numbers
age.
You just heard. I've been showing my age for a long time.
Yeah, and Dick Clark.
not recently. Don't start that rumor again. Our next caller is Linda from Rochester. Welcome, Linda. What's your question?
Hi. Thank you for taking my call.
Thank you for calling.
I'm so very glad that you continue on WHAM.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Are, too.
I have three quick questions. I'm a neophyte at computers. I work for a large healthcare company in the city that has a big IS, and so I never have a problem when they help me.
Great.
But I've got a new Mac, which is wonderful for Christmas. And the three quick questions are, I've heard you always warn about Outlook and how to avoid Outlook for viruses coming in. At work, I don't have a problem. IS supports this. But now I'm at home, and I'm on a new Mac, And I'm wondering, does Outlook have a problem with Macs as well as PCs, or?
Not specifically. You can be attacked by an Outlook-type virus, the viruses that come through email.
Mm-hmm.
But the script commands the viruses use are designed for Windows.
Okay.
So they can't actually execute on your Mac.
So although all your warnings for don't use Outlook would not necessarily apply for Mac?
Not necessarily, no. You could actually pass on a virus if you manually forwarded a message that had a virus in it to somebody else using Windows.
So if I email my email from work to myself at home, I might take it, a virus that could have gotten in?
Well, likely the other way around, because if your IS people, if your IS department is doing its job, they're scanning your system and scrubbing, you're scanning the email and scrubbing out any viruses before it ever gets to you.
Okay.
So it's unlikely that you could mail one from work to home, but it is not unlikely that you could mail one from home to work. Now, again, the theory is if your IS department is doing its job, they're scrubbing it before it gets to you, so you have no problem.
Okay. But if I use Outlook on the Mac at home, you think it's a little bit safer than...
Well, you can still get them from other people, and then you could wind up passing it from your computer onto some other friends that have PCs.
But they mostly can't execute on the Mac itself.
Correct. Friends don't let friends use Outlook.
Okay.
That should be our new motto.
I think I'm updated and confused at the same time.
Okay, excellent.
And then another question.
Our job here is done.
I know. We're doing a good job then.
What's your next question, Linda?
The next one is, because I do live in a PC world at work, we use Windows. A program for a Mac for Windows Virtual PC, is that, someone had suggested Virtual PC versus...
If you want to actually run a Windows program on your Mac, yes. But in most cases, you don't need to. You can just open the data in a Mac program. For example, if you use Microsoft Office for Windows at work, you can bring home your Word files and open them in Microsoft Office for Mac.
But if I wanted to mail an attachment...
Attachments are just files, so it doesn't. It's not. If you wanted to actually run a Windows program, for example, a lot of people use it for Access databases, because Microsoft hasn't released Access for the Mac because they realize they can't compete with FileMaker.
Okay.
If you need to physically run a Windows program, then Virtual PC lets you run Windows programs.
Okay.
But for data files, you can use a Mac program to open PC data files with no problem.
Okay. And one last question.
Sure.
It came with an OS 9.2. I think it was 9.2. And I tried to upgrade it to an OS 10, and I thought I did, and I was really excited. But now nothing works, so I ended up going back to OS 9.2. Does OS 10 really change everything around that much?
Yes. A lot of what you're learning in OS 9 is completely different in OS 10. The Windows world is running into the same problem, upgrading from 98 to XP. The commands have been moved around. The locations of things have been moved around. The control panel concept in OS 9 is gone, replaced by system preference application in OS 10.
Mm-hmm.
So a lot of things have been replaced and moved. And then the other side of the coin is that you have to upgrade all of your applications to run under OS 10 as well.
Okay.
Otherwise, they run in the OS 9 compatibility mode.
Which is slower and not recommended.
So maybe I should stay in OS 9.2.
Stick with 9 now until all of your programs get updated for 10.
Okay.
Now, a lot of the major programs have been. Microsoft Office is out for OS 10. In fact, Microsoft says it's better than Office XP for Windows, has more features and runs better. Of course, they would to the Mac crowd.
Right. Yeah.
They would say that. Illustrator, Freehand, a lot of the major programs are out for OS 10 already.
Okay. All right. Well, thank you so much.
Thank you so much. Mm-hmm. Our next caller is Barry from Pittsburgh. Welcome, Barry. What's your question?
Hi. I'm running XP, and I have one specific situation that I can't seem to find a fix for, and I've spent hours on it.
Okay.
Anytime that I'm trying to read an MP3 file from any of my CD-ROM drives, it reads so slow that if I would say, like, try to drag a whole recorded CD, which would be 650 megs, even dragging that over to anything on my C drive, it comes up with, 198 hours to go.
What MP3
player are you
using?
But regular data runs at the right speed.
Which MP3 player are you using?
Yeah.
The media player.
There's a problem, right?
Yeah, how much memory do you have in the system?
512.
And Windows Media Player isn't known for being very robust, but they do update it very frequently.
Well, the theory is you shouldn't be using it, but it surprises me that it's only MP3.
Right, you shouldn't even be using Media Player when you're just trying to drag data over.
Oh, you're not actually playing the MP3?
I can't even play them. It runs so slow. But then I figured, well, I'll just drag them onto my hard drive and play them from there.
Do you have problems with other sounds?
Nope. Everything else on the machine is perfect. It's this one little glitch. And if I go and I take the same data and I just change the extension from MP3 to anything else, it runs over just fine.
Here's part of your problem then. What's happening is when you open up a window in XP, it reads the header of every single one of those files and sets up Media Player to play it.
Uh-huh.
So if you were to look at those files and let the system just sit there, eventually you would see a little bit of information about each file, and over on the left of the window would be a little player thing. So you could just click the button and play that particular song right there.
Even though I'm just running Windows Explorer.
Yeah, this is Windows.
Over.
They know better than you.
Yeah, and I figured they were trying to help me.
Yeah, that's exactly what's happening. And that's clearly what's happening in this case.
How do I get that to stop?
Two things you need. How do you get it to stop?
You'd have to change the association.
The thing tries to figure out so much about the MP3 files that you can't even play it.
Exactly. Mm-hmm. Here's what you need to do, and I don't have my XP box in front of me, and XP isn't so new I haven't memorized
this. This is so cool. You're the first guys of like 20 people I've asked that have had a clue.
But what you need to do is there are different views for folders.
Yes.
Yep. And you need to change the view to, for example, classic mode.
Like a 98,
you know what? I always keep
button.
My view on get all the data.
There you go. That's not the one you want for this.
Yep.
I'll guarantee you, if you opened up a DOS window and copied from the CD using DOS, it would fly like a bat out of somewhere.
I bet it would.
And if you try, instead of playing them with Media Player, download Winamp, which is free, from www.winamp.com.
I'm familiar with
change
that.
The association.
And, it'll do that when it does an install.
Mm-hmm.
Then I'll
hopefully,
bet they play faster.
I mean,
anyway, try that.
Got it.
There you go.
Beautiful. Thanks, guys.
Thank you.
Okay, bye.
Thank you. We are going to take another break now, since we just pulled that one out of thin air, and we'll be back in just a couple of minutes with Dave and Steve. Me, Nick Francesco, on Soundbites only and exclusively on 1180 WHAM.
Here's Nick Francesco.
And every once in a while, I have to remind you that would depend on the compression ratio.
On a DVD.
We are back. But before we get back to the phones, Steve has a...
disclaimer?
okay, I thought it was going to be a retraction, but a clarification.
Yeah, I have to apologize to a lot of my customers. Last week,
other dealers.
And other Apple dealers. We've heard from other dealers in the state that apparently can listen to the show, which is great. Last week, I mentioned that we had sold out of our first allocation of iMacs. I didn't actually mean we had any in stock, but they're all sold out.
It's the allocation.
Right. We haven't got any yet.
All that you were promised have been re-promised to somebody else. You haven't actually gotten any yet.
Right. So, and we're waiting to be able to make or to make our second allocation.
Right.
And actually, Jobs promised at the keynote that they would ship by the end of the month, so he has until Thursday to keep up his promise.
Yeah, but did he actually say this month? Or
no, he said, by the end of January.
That's getting him off his dock.
Right.
Doesn't mean anything about getting them to you. But we're getting to you at Soundbites. You know the numbers. You can get them off our website if you need to. That's go to wham1180.com, and down in the lower left is a button that'll take you to our page.
Scary.
There's a link there to our website, soundbites.org. And we have Rob from Spencerport on the phone. Welcome, Rob. What's your question?
Hi, guys.
Hi there.
I'm having problems starting up Windows 98.
Oh.
I converted from Windows 95 to Windows 98, second edition, over the Christmas holidays.
Mm-hmm.
And it was working fine until a couple of days ago. And the system got hung up, and it was just powered down. And now when I try to power it back up, it starts to come up. I can get into safe mode okay. I can even start up and go through the step-by-step confirmation of the commands.
Mm-hmm.
And I eventually get down to the point where it says, it says load all Windows drivers. And then it gives me a list of a number of these things that end in .vxd. The last one in that list is msmouse.vxd. And I say, actually, it doesn't matter if I confirm that one or refuse that one.
Mm-hmm.
Cursor moves down one line, flashes, and then that's where I sit.
Yeah, it's so right after that state.
Yeah, the next one is the one that's not working.
Yeah, how do I know what that next one is?
Bootlog.
You pretty much don't.
Well, no, bootlog.
There is a bootlog option that logs all of the DLLs that load that you don't actually get prompted for.
Okay.
There's, what, thousands of them?
Thousands.
Yeah. I have gone out there and actually seen that bootlog and looked in it, but there appeared to be way too much information for me to make any sense out of.
Well, what you want to do is look for mouse.vxd, msmouse.vxd, and look at the next line. That's your problem.
Okay.
Which theoretically should be the last line in the bootlog.
Theoretically. So what you want to do is take a look at that, and that will at least tell you what it is. Now, as to how you deal with it from there, it depends on what it is.
What else?
You're running 98?
Yes.
There's a system file integrity checker. Start
SFC.
Right. Start accessories. No. Start.
Just go to the.
File.
Just go. Start run SFC.
That's easier than finding it.
Yeah. What had changed? You said it was. You did it over the Christmas and it was running fine. What had had you installed any new software? Or any update?
Not just prior to it failing. Actually, my wife and son were on the internet and got sort of hung up there and just powered it down. Prior to that, we hadn't installed anything new and.
And I know we hate that we keep harping on this, but you are running an antivirus program?
Yes.
And it's been up to date.
Yeah, and I'm able to run that okay. Mm-hmm. You know, and that shows me nothing.
Here's what you want to do. Run that SFC. Go into safe mode. Click the start button.
Yep.
Click run.
Yep.
In the box, type SFC for system file checker and hit enter.
Okay.
It will probably ask you for your CD. Because it might want to replace some files.
Okay.
So just put the CD in when it asks for it and let it run for a while.
I don't have a CD drive. Do I in safe mode?
Well, no. Right, you won't. What you want to...
Gotta hope they're in the CABS file.
Better hope they're in the CABS file.
99% of the folks copy the content into the CAB files, which is under the Windows folder.
Yeah, Windows
under
options. Options, CABs. Look for the .cab files, which are all the Windows installers. If they're not there, copy. Well, you can't.
He probably
can't get into Windows
anymore.
He
did the upgrade. Unless you copied them over.
Yeah. So you'll need to boot with a DOS disk or the Windows setup disk and start it with CD-ROM support, but don't start the Windows setup.
Okay.
Then you can get to the CD-ROM drive and copy the files into the CABS.
Just create a folder off your root directory called Win98, and then you copy the contents of the CD Windows 98 subdirectory into your hard drive Windows 98 folder. Then you should be able to do it.
I'll give that a try.
Go for it.
Thank you very much.
Good luck. Our next caller is Dave from Syracuse. Welcome, Dave. What's your question? Dave, are you there?
Hello.
Hello, Dave.
No, this isn't Dave. This is Jack in Avon.
Jack in Avon. Welcome.
How you doing?
Oh, good. Confused, but good. What's your question?
Well, I hope you're straightening it out.
Meanwhile, Dave is going, hello, hello.
Hold on, Dave. I'll get to you eventually. Go ahead, Jack. What's your question?
Okay, I got two USB ports on the back of my computer.
Right.
I've had it hooked up before where I've had my video camera, my webcam hooked into it, and it's worked.
Mm-hmm.
I moved the computer to a different room, and it seemed to stop working. I've gone in and into DOS, and I've checked, and it's enabled. I've checked in the device manager for conflicts. It says no conflicts, and it says that it sees the USB ports and that they're operating properly.
You run in Windows 98 Second Edition?
Yes.
And did you do the USB update?
No.
Might want to consider doing that.
Which
I've gone to all the Windows updates, and I've updated everything that they've offered.
The USB update is not listed in Windows update, which is annoying.
Yeah. Okay. You have to do that one separately.
Okay. And manually.
What you want to do is go to Windows, do a search.
Download support.microsoft.com.
Go to support.microsoft.com and do a search for the
USB update.
Okay, and that should take care of my problem?
Give it a shot.
That's the first place we'd look.
Okay, thanks.
Thanks.
Bye-bye.
Our next caller may or may not be Dave from Syracuse.
Yes,
Dave, are you
Dave.
There? It is Dave.
Yes, it is.
All right. Hey, welcome, Dave.
Our first caller from Syracuse.
Well, I'm actually on the road.
Have you pulled over?
I sure am.
That's what I like to hear.
I have a brand-new machine running XP, and just this week I had Roadrunner installed in my house.
Mm-hmm.
And now neither my Outlook Express or my Outlook works.
Right.
I get a message spool or Microsoft Messenger spool error, and it shuts my programs right down.
Did the Roadrunner people install any software on your computer?
No, they didn't. It was already Roadrunner ready. They just came right in and plugged it in.
Sometimes they install a diagnostic management program, which may not be compatible with it.
The other part of the problem may well be that you are looking, Outlook and Outlook Express are looking for some other ISP, which they can't get to at this point.
Right.
Who was your earlier internet service provider?
AOL.
AOL is nasty.
That's a big problem.
It's very hard to remove all the bits of AOL. all the dial-up bits. The AOL's got their own special dial-up networking options. And we've been hearing from people that they don't quite work very well under XP. So getting them taken out and then setting it up for direct LAN access.
If you go into the Microsoft support and a knowledge base, they've got a procedure up there on the knowledge base on how to remove, a step-by-step procedure on how to remove AOL from Outlook, being taken over by AOL.
And at the same time, sometimes while I'm on the net and it's working just fine, I'll get an RU launch error.
Oh, run launch, yeah. I get those all the time.
Yeah, that's a similar problem. We've talked about that one as well. So, yeah, get that, as Dave said, go find that step-by-step, and that should help
you. It hides itself in more places than you wouldn't imagine, and they'll give you the step-by-step details.
Was it AOL 6 or 7?
7.
Because 7 is especially bad under XP.
Okay.
All right.
All right, thank you very much.
All right.
Yep, bye.
All right, I hate to say that. AOL is certainly a magnificent company and program, I'm sure, but there are a lot of problems with it in terms of upgrading it and getting rid of it if you don't want it
anymore. Which is not uncommon for other programs since XP is so new.
That's exactly right. I'm sure they'll get it right next time, but XP is so new that not everybody's getting it. We're going to take a break. We're going to do some news and stuff like that. We'll be back in just a short while with Mr. Dave Enright, Mr. Steve Ray, Dr. Rob Linton on the buttons, and me, Nick Francesco, on Sound Bites, only on 1180 WHAM.
Welcome back to America's longest running computer show, Sound Bites, on News Radio 1180 WHAM. Get online now. Call 222-1180. The Choice One toll-free line at 1-800-295-1180 or star 1180. A free call for Verizon Wireless subscribers. Once again, here's Nick Francesco, Dave Enright, and Steve Ray on News Radio 1180 WHAM.
All right, the reality is when Steve starts playing air guitar, it really is time to change the music. I'm Nick Francesco, and you're listening to Soundbite. Steve Enright, Dave.
No, Ray. I'm Dave Enright. I'm Steve Ray, and you are Nick Francesco.
Elvis has left the building, and we're going to talk about the poll here.
Yeah, go
every week we do a poll at soundbites.org. Last week's poll was where did you acquire your most recent upgrade or add-on? We want to thank Paul Doering, who's probably not listening, for that poll. And if you have a poll idea, by the way, for God's sake, send it to me. I am so helpless. Send me your poll ideas, soundbites.org. If you've got one, send it. But the choices were 212 of you voted. I really want to thank you. That's down from 280 the week before, but hopefully all of you, everybody out there, should be voting in the polls at soundbites.org. Right now there are 13 people online. Last week's poll was where did you acquire your most recent upgrade or add-on? The winner was local retail, 56% of you, followed by mail-order retail.
I say, as owners of local retail stores, Dave and I thank you.
Yes, yes, exactly. Very much.
A third choice was why was the surveillance camera on, which is my favorite. And then followed by eBay and followed by a friend or relative. So thanks all 212 of you. This week's poll is even a little easier. Computers have, LJ O'Neill sent this one in, computers have either become a new hobby, the slave is now the master, they've simplified my life or they've made my life more complicated. We've got 50 votes so far, and we're looking for your vote at soundbites.org.
And we want to encourage folks to sign up for the forums. And when you do sign up, please put in the city and state that you're from. Not that we're going to sit there and, you know, track it or pass it on to other folks. It's just some three geeks who want to kind of track that information.
Right. We're always delighted to know. So now that we're on a larger, stronger signal station, we'd like to know how far out we're getting.
We've got to get that pushpin map running.
Exactly right.
And, electronically on the website.
Electronic pushpin map. The Soundbites forums, for those of you who don't know what they're about, is a set of forums where you can get in and leave your questions in between the shows. Dave, Steve, and I sometimes will answer questions, but also there are a bunch of dedicated computer geeks on there who are answering each other's questions, and it's a really kind of nice little place to get your computer stuff answered. So check out soundbites.org, and you'll see all kinds of neat stuff. We have 429 registered users right now in the forums, and you can join them at soundbites.org. But we're going to go back to the phones now, and we're going to speak to Todd from Holly. Welcome, Todd. What's your question?
Well, mine's an interesting one. I have a problem with my browser, my internet browser. I'm running the latest Internet Explorer with all the updates and everything, and I have Roadrunner as my ISP. Now, I've called Roadrunner. They say it's not a problem with them. I can get on any website I want except Yahoo's homepage, which was my homepage up until about a week ago, and then all of a sudden I click on my Internet Explorer and Yahoo doesn't come up. It's like it can't find it.
Are you running any personal firewall software?
I have a firewall, but that, I mean, I took that down and then tried it and put it back up and tried it. It makes no difference.
Nothing.
I'm using just the zone alarm.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, because the zone alarm can prevent you from getting out to the internet too.
Yeah, well, this I can get on any site I want except for Yahoo's homepage.
What
I can even
get
to the what's that?
What do you get instead?
It just comes up unable to find, you know, that generic screen that you get when you can't get
when
to
you
the site.
And the site is www.yahoo.com.
That's correct.
No dashes, no exclamation points, no nothing. And it can't find it?
Nope.
But it can find any other site.
I can go anywhere else. And I can even get to, like, if I want to go to the game page in Yahoo and just put games.yahoo.com, I can get there. But once I get there, if I hit home, it just will not go to the
home
page.
If you go to the tools, go ahead.
Yeah, you're going to the same place. Check your internet tools to see what your home page is.
Right.
It may not be Yahoo anymore.
Yeah, it actually is.
All right, well, then try deleting it and typing in Yahoo again.
I did that.
Well, sometimes what happens is some of the virus scripts that you can get to on websites will change your home page.
Gotcha.
To something else, usually there by
yourself. I would say delete those temporary internet files.
Yeah.
And
I did that also.
Here's the other thing you want to try. Go into Tools Internet Options.
Mm-hmm.
Click on the Security tab.
Yep.
Hit Restricted Sites.
Yep.
Check the list of sites that are in there.
There's nothing there. It's not there.
Okay, look, done everything.
The next one is the Content Advisor.
Right. Check Content Advisor.
Yep.
See if that's enabled or disabled.
And if it's enabled, you might have it set too high for Yahoo.
Okay.
One of the settings is what we call paranoid mode, where it won't let you go to unrated sites.
Gotcha.
Oh, speaking of which,
I guess the main thing is, I mean, I've had it set up this way for like 2 years at least.
Yeah. The other thing to try is a different
has
browser.
Changed, and it just seemed to...
Right. It is very likely that something you ran...
Okay.
Accidentally changed something in your browser.
Gotcha.
Steve's other point is a good one. Go to opera.com.
Opera, okay.
And download Opera. It is a free download. They want you to pay $30 to get rid of the ads, but you're only using it for testing at the moment until you find out how wonderful it is.
Okay.
So you download Opera and install it and shut down Internet Explorer, start up Opera, and see if you can get to Yahoo.
Gotcha.
That will tell you whether the problem is your machine, your ISP, which both are unlikely, or the browser, which is really likely.
And you can also get Netscape.
Or you can do it with Netscape.
Yeah. Netscape 6.2.
Yeah, just get another browser.
Right, and also get you off of Outlook Express, because that's how 99%, or I should say 85% of the viruses are being transmitted now is through Outlook.
I see.
And the rest of them come from the Napster clones.
Yeah, no, I don't have any of those on there. So.
But I would suggest you give that a try.
Okay.
Okie doke.
Great, I appreciate it.
Thanks so much.
We had a caller, I believe it was a couple weeks ago. Nick and honestly did pass on the email to me, but that's when I was in the midst of doing an upgrade to Netscape that I lost the email. Somebody wanted...
Gemma,
was it? Wanted the content advisor file.
Gemma, write back to him.
Yeah, if you will, I finally got it, and I can, but I lost your email address, so if you email me, I will more than gladly send you that file for the content advisor.
You sent it to me, Gemma, and I passed it on, and then, of course, deleted the message for mine, because I passed it on to Dave, and then he lost it. So it's dave@soundbites.org, and he can deal with it directly. Our next caller is John from Rochester. Welcome, John. What's your question?
Hey, I have Windows... 98 second edition. I've got DSL, and it seems to me that ever since they upgraded my DSL that I've had problems with people. I'm not being able to be heard over my microphone when I'm using NetMeeting, and when MS Messenger came out with this voice chat, I'm not able to use it unless I go back to my dial-up connection. It won't even let me in, and they said it had something to do with the DSL is blocking a port or using a port, and they claim not to know what the heck I'm talking about.
What has been known for both DSL and Roadrunner is that they're meant for home users, and so they will block server ports to prevent you from running a server and sending a lot of information up. And what these net meetings do is you basically are sending so much data out that it could be accidentally considered a server.
You see, I can, you know, I can see them, and it seems as though now they can't see me on NetMeeting, but I can use my camera in other situations on other sites that have live, and I can talk on their sites. So what you're saying is the DSL is probably blocking it because they think I might be, you know, setting up a server?
They generally block most ports, so any program that wants to use one of the odd ports, like NetMeeting does, may well be blocked, whereas something that sneaks it out through port 80 or whatever, as if it were a web thing.
Can you change the port in NetMeeting?
I have no idea.
Look through the NetMeeting settings and see if you can change the port it uses.
Uh-huh.
And port 80 is the standard web port, which is not blocked because that's all where all web pages come through. And
okay.
That might let you connect up into the NetMeeting server.
And, barring that, I'm stuck with whatever DSL wants me to have.
More or less, yeah.
If you go through their terms of use agreement, that 400-page document full of legalese and no one, there may be a list of specific ports it blocks, but not likely. It's usually, the terms is you're not going to use it as a server, or you're not going to resell it, things like that.
What you might want to do is call your Internet service provider's help desk.
I've talked with the technical people.
Well, but what you want to do is explain to them what you're trying to do and ask them what open ports are available.
Oh, I see.
You may need to go to a level 2 or level 3 tech before they know what you're talking about to begin with.
Right.
In order to give you an answer.
Right. But the point is, once you know what the open ports are, then you all just have to wander around a net meeting until you find where you get to set the ports.
Okay. Thanks a lot.
Okie doke.
Bye-bye.
Thanks. I wish I could give him a better answer than that, but I just don't use NetMeeting. And, of course, I don't have my machine here to even boot it up to look at. I'm on a machine that Wham owns. Our next caller is Mike from Rochester. Welcome, Mike. What's your question?
Yes. I've been unable to get to my system information, through accessories. And it says that... there's a device attached to the system is not functioning.
Sounds like the registry has gotten messed up. You're running Windows what?
98 SE.
All right. What you're probably going to have to do, because no matter what you click on, it won't open them, correct?
Yes.
What you want to do is reinstall Windows over Windows.
I tried that. And it doesn't do anything. The problem started when I tried to put in Windows XP Home.
Mm-hmm.
And then,
it didn't go through all the way?
No. It said something about the drive C is corrupted and cannot be repaired or something. But it runs perfect when I just run it.
Yeah, well, it might be, but it's getting unstable is what it's telling you.
Yes.
In other words, there could be a bunch of bad clusters and everything else on there.
How old is this machine?
About a year.
Do you smoke?
Yes.
see smokers who smoke at the computer.
And smokers with pets.
And smokers or
anybody
with pets.
Yeah, but smokers and pets.
What you have to remember is that there is a fan in the back of the computer. In fact, several fans in the back and one or two in the front, depending on how old or new your machine is.
Mm-hmm.
And what that does is draw air in through the front and out through the back and sends that air over all the components, including the hard drive and the floppy.
Mm-hmm.
Well, that's to keep it cool. But if you're smoking... eventually, you get this is kind of a little gross, and of course, you're doing it to your lungs, so it's probably not gross to you if you're used to it. You get a layer of nicotine on all the components, and that can get into the hard drive. And it is possible that your hard drive is going. And I hate to tell you that, but it may be time to take your system to a competent technician.
Local shop and have them check it out.
The first thing you can try yourself is boot into safe mode and run ScanDisk in thorough mode where it scans every block on the hard drive.
Mm-hmm.
And then run defrag after ScanDisk says it's okay.
Mm-hmm.
But it may well be time to take it into somebody. I'm sorry.
Try that, though.
Well, Dave put it together, so I'm going to bring it back to Dave.
Bring it back to Dave and let him take a look at it.
Bring it in, we'll take a look. We had one in the shop just yesterday. It was so full of dust in that we couldn't read any of the labels on the motherboard.
Yeah.
It was so full of dust in that Dan's sitting there scraping off all this, because we saved the dirt.
Sure you do.
I mail it back out to folks. That's another story.
Yeah, it's not a bad idea for users to run the vacuum cleaner inside the machine.
We had a handful of dust in that because it was just hanging. All, you know, like drabs of it, just dreadlocks hanging from the hard drive cables and everything
it's
else.
Especially
it's like,
bad if the computer sits on the floor where it then picks up all the dust off the carpeting.
Right. We're going to take a break. We'll be back in just a couple of minutes with Dave, Steve, Rob, me, Nick, and all of you at Soundbites on 1180 WHAM.
Once again, here's Nick Francesco.
So look, I've got this little tracking software that tells me who's on the website right now. There's 13 people online, one of whom is from Florida, and I'd like to know how did this person get there? Clearly not the archives.
Drove.
Oh, sorry. And there's somebody else from Bell South, but that could be just somebody in the southern tier here. We're taking your calls on Soundbites. I'm Nick Francesco with Dave Enright, Steve Ray, Rob Linton on the buttons, John from Henrietta on the line. Welcome, John. What's your question?
Yeah, thank you for taking my call.
Sure.
I'm having a problem with my floppy disk A drive.
Mm-hmm.
What happened is I'm getting when I hit my floppy disk A, I get the sign that says 5 1/4.
Okay.
Well, actually, it should be 3 1/2.
What has happened is in the BIOS, you've got to go in there and reset it to 3 1/2.
How do you do that?
Well, when the machine is starting up, usually it'll tell you to either hit the delete key or the F2 key to get into the BIOS.
Or get into setup.
Get into setup. Now, you'll be what type of machine is this?
It's a CyberMax.
Okay.
Yeah, it depends on what BIOS you have.
You tend to
want
to AMI, and you probably hit the delete key. You'll get a blue screen. It's divided in half.
Right.
Now, on the left-hand side, the very top one, you hit enter on that selection.
Uh-huh.
It will bring a screen up, and it'll show you the date, the time, and then it's the A drive, the B drive, and then any of your hard drives. You keep tabbing down or using the arrow key to get down to the A drive, and usually it's the page up or the plus key. You just keep hitting those, and it will cycle through. It'll say 3 1/2-inch floppy, 720, 3 1/2-inch floppy, 1.4, 5 1/4, you know, the different varieties of 5 1/4. Stop at the 3 1/2, 1.44. Hit escape to get out of that. Go over on the right-hand side. Second item from the bottom is save and exit.
Sometimes F10 is the save and exit.
Yeah,
right. You read your screens. It
you
might
can
be a
tab
little
around
different depending
and you
on
go
which
down
one
and
you
it
have.
Say save and exit, and that should then remember the settings.
Oh, beautiful.
Now, is it losing any time?
Like what?
Is it losing any time?
No, it's not.
Okay.
That's probably
in fact,
not.
In fact, I just put a new floppy disk A in yesterday because that's what I thought it was, and it come up the same thing.
Okay. Yeah, it's in the BIOS.
Give it a shot.
Okay, thank you very much, sir.
Thank you so much. Our next caller, Tony from Rochester. Welcome, Tony. What's your question?
Oh, yeah. I'm running Internet Explorer 5.5 on a 98 machine. And I had a problem recently where, I don't know, at some point I installed QuickTime for some other application, and for some reason it installed a QuickTime installer, and when I go to install software, do downloads, even from Microsoft, it runs a self-executing .exe file or whatever, and I get an error. I said, can't find the QuickTime installer, so I ripped all that out of there, and now it's back to the point where it's looking for some type of ActiveX applet to install the .exe for self-executable installs. And it says, you know, we'll take you to the Microsoft site for ActiveX. If you click here, I click there. But I really don't see anything on there for download installers. It says there's one there, but it really doesn't refer to what IE55 is looking for to install these self-installing executables.
Yeah, I actually ran into this the other day on a Sony Vaio. Somewhere in your MIME type settings, the EXE MIME type, or application octet, executable, something like that. The MIME type for EXEs is set wrong. And I haven't been able to find where you set the MIME types yet.
Yeah, neither have I.
I'm still digging.
In Windows 98?
Yeah. Yep. Not the file types, the MIME types.
That's exactly what it is. And I was contemplating, you know, upgrading the 6.0 IE and just, you know, letting it reinstall itself. But some of your comments last week with regards
to... No, 6.0 is pretty good.
They fixed most of the problems now.
Yeah.
Just make sure you run
the
patches.
Yeah, but you were speaking about RAM limitations. I've got 128K, and it's an older 233 machine. I don't know if they'd be...
Yeah, but no, 6.1 will still be able to handle it. The 6.0, when Internet Explorer 6.0 came out, yes, there were a number of features that needed to be corrected. But with 6.1, though, they pretty well corrected that, and it's very stable. On a 128K machine, that should be okay.
You could even try reinstalling the 5.5 over top of it.
Yeah, I was thinking about that.
No, it'll come back and say it wants to do a repair. Yeah.
Well, actually, the repair might work.
Repair might.
Yeah, if you rerun the IE installer, one of the options is to repair, and it may fix the MIME types for you.
Although that's another thing. It's a catch-22 situation because you go to do an upgrade or an install from Microsoft, and you get the same error because it's trying to download the installer.
Try going to 6.
Something on the XEs. Somewhere around the standard IE installer just downloads like a 300 or 400K install stub, which then downloads the whole rest of the program.
Right. Well, you can't get to that. I mean, it looks at it as like something like that.
If you dig around the rest of Microsoft's download site somewhere, you can find the full install download, which is like 50 megs.
Okay.
And you can find that. And then the trick is, instead of clicking on the link to download it, do a right click and do a save target as.
Yes, right.
And then it just saves it on your disk and doesn't try to do any MIME executions on it.
All right, I'll see if I can find it on the Microsoft site, the full shot. And see
there you go.
Okay, guys, thanks.
Thanks. We're going to take another quick break. We'll be back in just a couple of minutes with Dave, Steve, Rob, and me, Nick, on Soundbites at 1180 WHAM.
These guys know computers. They may not know anything else, but they know computers. They're Nick Francesco, Dave Enright, and Steve Ray. And this is Soundbites on News Radio 1180 WHAM.
It's insulted by some bump guy we've never even met. Nice.
Do you really need to know anything else?
That's right. What else?
That is
important?
Everything. Computers
are really.
Everything.
Computers are everything. And to prove it, we're going to talk to Wendy here in Rochester. Welcome, Wendy. What's your question?
Hello.
Hey there.
Hi, guys. Thanks for taking my call.
Thank you for calling.
First, I want to say hello, John, my husband. He's listening right now.
Hello, John.
At least he said he is.
We're going to try to listen. We're going to try to answer her question.
Does that mean, we're just going to talk about computers, John. Relax.
Yeah.
Go ahead, Wendy.
Okay, I'm having a problem with my mail program. I'm trying to change the fonts to...
What is your mail program?
We have Microsoft Outlook.
Okay.
And it's the most current version.
Mm-hmm. 2002 with whatever patches they've released yet.
Pardon me?
2002 is the current version plus whatever patches they've been releasing.
Okay.
Go ahead.
So I'm trying to change my fonts. And every time I change them, it's fine as long as the computer's on. It saves them. But then when I close down and reboot again, it defaults back to Arial. And I can't get the fonts to stay the way I want them to.
Now, you're telling me to use it as the default?
I'm trying to use it as the default, right?
Yeah, but no, once you change it, then you've got to, there's usually a button in there, I think.
I go into the tools and then options, and then I go into mail format.
Yeah, I avoid Outlook.
Yeah,
like
you're right so far. Keep going.
And then I go into stationery and fonts.
Yeah.
And I select the fonts that I want, the sizes and the type.
And then, click default.
And then there isn't anything that says default. That's what.
But you're changing the stationery font itself.
Right. Yes. Yeah.
That should work.
Yeah.
Yeah, and so I click OK.
There's another option. Buried in there somewhere, where you tell it which stationery to use by default.
Yeah.
Because you can set up multiple stationery.
Right.
It may be that you've got a second stationery file created, and the default stationery is the other one.
Okay.
Nick is searching for it now, but somewhere hiding in the Outlook setup. Well, the other thing to keep in mind, though, is that email is meant for raw text, and it's likely that the person at the other end will not see the font you use anyway.
Yeah.
Oh, really?
In fact,
yeah.
If you try to use extra fonts,
right,
they will get gibberish code at the other end.
Hmm.
Or look real strange.
Right.
Yeah, real
unless their email program is set to accept HTML web pages inside email, which is a bad thing because that's how viruses get transmitted.
Right.
Right. What you want to do is you want to change the font for the normal style.
Okay.
Okay. If you go, what you want to do is this: start a new email message.
Okay.
Move your cursor into the body of the message.
Right.
Then choose Tools, Options, General.
Okay.
Click the Email Options button.
Okay.
Go to the Personal Stationery tab.
Okay.
Stand on one foot, face east,
with your hand pointing north.
And in there, you can change the font settings for new mail messages and replying or forwarding messages. That is a different place from where you've ever gone before.
Yeah.
See, the other place is just, they're just fooling you. It's not a real place. It doesn't really change anything. This is where you change it.
Okay.
Okie doke.
Okay, thank you.
Okay, have fun.
Okay, thanks.
Bye-bye. Our next caller is Joe from Rochester. Welcome, Joe. What's your question?
Yeah, I have a Mac question.
I'm sorry, next caller.
What can we do for you?
Well, I think it's a minor problem. When I first got it, it's a G4, and I'm running 9.1 OS, the operating system.
Mm-hmm.
And the machine wouldn't go to sleep by itself. You know, after 30 minutes, that's what I have it set for. And I found through some investigation, if I trash the Finder preferences, that would fix the problem. Mm-hmm. And I would do that so often and fix the problem. Well, my kids bought me a scanner for Christmas. It's an Epson scanner.
Mm-hmm.
And since I hooked that up, and it's always on, it doesn't go to sleep by itself. So I unhooked the scanner, and, you know, I unhooked everything, and it went to sleep by itself. Hooked it back up. And again, I think it's a minor problem.
Right.
So, anyway.
The sleep.
So I says, well, let me just see. So I unhooked the scanner again and let it sit for 30 minutes, and the darn thing won't go to sleep no matter what I do. Now I trash the preferences. Number one, is that a big problem? I usually use that as a gauge that the operating system is kind of working okay without any problems?
Well, there's a couple of issues involved. One is that sleep mode itself has been notoriously difficult to work properly, but it's usually in waking up. The machines will go to sleep and never wake up again, so you have to restart them. But when it's set to go to sleep, it goes to sleep after idle. And apparently something is not idle, so the system won't go to sleep.
Correct.
And typically what's happening is, as you had mentioned, your scanner program. Most of the scanner programs come with what they call a one-touch or a monitor program that watches the scanner all the time, every second, waiting for you to push the scan button so that it can automatically run the scan program. So because that program is running in the background, the machine is not idle, therefore won't go to sleep.
Mm-hmm.
What you may need to do is go through your extension manager. Well, if you're lucky, it's in the startup folder. Inside your system folder, there's a startup items,
mm-hmm.
which lists all of the programs that run at startup. There may be something in there called Epson Monitor, Epson Monitor is for the printer, which does the same thing for Epson printers,
mm-hmm.
Or Epson Scanner, Epson Scan Central, something like that.
Right.
Remove that from the startup items, and then that program won't run. You may also have to go through your extension manager and find the Epson scanner drivers and scanner startup programs. Something is preventing the machine from going idle, so it never goes to sleep because it sees it's not idle.
Yeah. What does happen is the monitor shuts off, of course, and I think the disk stops spinning, but the fans are still running.
Right. There's actually three settings. If you go to the Energy Saver Control Panel,
right,
the standard view is put the system to sleep after X minutes. There's an advanced button or extra options button that lets you control the monitor sleep and the hard drive sleep independently.
Correct.
Typically what I do is I set the computer to never go to sleep, set the monitor to go to sleep, because the monitor is the big energy draw anyway.
Right.
And then when you know you're not going to be using it for a while, let it do a shutdown.
Mm-hmm.
So you're setting the monitor to sleep to save electricity, but we've had trouble getting machines to wake up after being asleep.
I've never had a problem waking it up. I always use that as a gauge.
Yeah.
That the operating system is operating okay, there's no bugs in it, and so on, and there are no systems running in the background.
It's some program running in the background that isn't letting the computer go idle.
Yeah, I know, and I can't find it. I disconnected it the first time, I disconnected the, it's a USB.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, but disconnecting the scanner doesn't stop the software from running in the background.
In fact, a lot of times it makes it worse because the software is trying to talk to the scanner that isn't there anymore.
You've got
to
shut down the software as opposed to removing the scanner.
Okay.
So give that a try.
I will. I'll say, so I need to go in and find it in the startup folder.
Exactly.
Right.
We've got to take a break. We'll be back in just a couple of minutes with Dave Enright, Steve Ray. Rob Linton is working the buttons, and I'm Nick Francesco for Soundbites at 1180 WHAM. You've got a computer problem
with your PC
or your Mac,
tune in to Soundbites.
Contact the guy
the old-fashioned way. Use your telephone and dial 222-1180 or the Choice One toll-free line at 1-800-295-1180 or *1180. A free call for Verizon Wireless subscribers. Welcome back to Soundbites with Nick Francesco on News Radio 1180 WHAM.
See, on any other show, that would sound like a mistake.
Yeah.
Here, it's just an example of multitasking. We're back. Nick Francesco, Dave Enright, Steve Ray, Rob Linton swearing at the computer, and Andy from Clarkson on the line. Welcome, Andy. What's your question?
Good afternoon.
Hi there.
I have a digital video camera, and I've taken my movies and downloaded them onto my PC. When I burn them to my CDs, is there any kind of format I could use where I could view these movies on my DVD player?
There's two ways to do it. With an ordinary CD writer, you need to burn them in VCD format, video CD. Not every burning software supports VCD, though, so that's a trick to find.
What are you using?
Just the Windows...
What burning software?
Like Easy Creator or Roxy?
Easy CD Creator, Roxy.
I think you have to go up to the full deluxe.
Yeah.
Titanium. What do they call it?
Yeah, platinum.
Days? Platinum. It's titanium on the Mac, though.
Yeah. 5.1 or 5. Yeah,
that may be one of the extra features it offers is the VCD format. However, not all DVD players can read VCD. The more direct format is the DVD-R. But that requires a different burning drive, a DVD-R drive.
Okay.
And then the video needs to be stored in MPEG-2 format.
You see those new drives coming out by TCM. They're about $600 right now, but
right.
They're
going
to be able to do both CDs and DVDs.
Yeah, Apple's shipping several models of what they're calling the Super Drive, which is a DVD-R-CD-RW combination, and it's using a Panasonic drive in it that you can buy in a retail market for $600-$700 to make DVD discs to play on a DVD.
Okie doke.
Okay, thank you.
Thank you, Andy. Our next caller is Tim from Rochester. Welcome, Tim. What's your question? Tim, are you there?
This is Tim from Rochester.
Yes. Yes,
yeah,
it is.
Hello, guys. I installed Roadrunner.
Yeah.
And Internet Explorer is having a real difficult time executing after the installation of Roadrunner. What happens is it looks like I get the hourglass come up, and then the hourglass goes away, and it goes back to my pointed cursor. And then about 5 minutes later, the Internet Explorer screen will come up with with the default web page on there that I'm looking for. And I checked with the folks at Roadrunner, and they did a test from their end, and the response time from their end is better than good. They said there's no problem at all there. And I'm just, it looks like Explorer is processing in the background or something.
When they installed Roadrunner, did they install anything on your machine, or were you Roadrunner ready?
There's outside of the cable modem.
Yeah. How were you getting on the internet before?
Did they put any software on your computer?
I did the installation with the software.
Okay, and how were you getting on the internet before?
AOL.
Here we go again. A couple of things. First, you need to remove any and all. First, you need to uninstall AOL. And if you were listening earlier, we talked about a site that has a step-by-step set of instructions.
Yeah, if you go to support.microsoft.com and do a search on removing AOL from Internet Explorer, and they've got a tech page up there that will walk you through step-by-step of getting it out of there, because AOL buries itself in just about every crevice that Windows can put things.
The other thing you want to check, again, as we had mentioned earlier, is in the Internet tools, check what your startup page or home page actually is, and make sure some virus hasn't snuck in and changed your home page to be downloading a file. So when you launch Internet Explorer, instead of going to the page you want, it would actually go out to this other page, download the file, and then sometimes send you back to what your real home page
was. And in Internet Explorer, what you want to do is go up to the toolbar, go to Internet Options, and then there's a tab there that says Connections. Make sure it says that it's now clicked to never dial your dial-up anymore. You can then walk through the setup program, which will then say, that you're connecting over a LAN, which you are now, and then it'll automatically detect the next page is automatically detect the addresses, and then it'll ask you if you want to set up an email. You can put that in there if you want, and it'll walk you through those steps, or you can just ignore it for right now and say no, and it should click and then start back up into Internet Explorer.
And then one thing you want to turn off is also in the Internet Connection tab, there's a use or automatically detect proxy settings. You can turn that off since you're not using a proxy server.
I did pretty much everything you're talking about. The only thing I didn't do out of all that, including the antivirus scan, was the removal of AOL the way you're saying. I did it in...
And remove pack program?
Yeah, I did it up in the control panel. But
guess what? You look in the Internet, if you go into Windows Explorer, you'll still see the folder there for AOL.
A lot of programs will bury themselves in the registry, and even the uninstaller won't remove them completely. Especially since you're going from a dial-up service into a LAN-based service.
Okay. All right. Well, we'll try that.
Give it a shot.
Right. And also the standard, make sure you have all the updates running for IE.
Right.
One of the first things I did was download the latest edition when I finally got on. And
Give it a shot and let us know.
Our next caller is Matt from Churchville. Welcome, Matt. What's your question? Matt,
hey,
are you there?
Yo, Matt.
Matt's gone. It's Jerry from Rochester. Welcome, Jerry. What's your question?
How you doing, guys?
Good.
I wanted to find out, what is an ISP number? What does that represent?
It's like a phone number or an address.
Tell me what you think an ISP number, what do you mean by an ISP number?
I'll give you a scenario. Mm-hmm. I'm working on this one information board, and you see someone post their name, and then there's the number after it.
That's the IP number.
The IP number, I'm sorry.
Okay.
The IP number.
Every address on the Internet has an IP number.
Every computer on the
Internet. Every device on the Internet has an IP number.
Mm-hmm.
Every IP number must be unique. It's like Steve said, it's like your address. You can't get mail if you don't have an address, and it's got to be different from everybody else's address, or you don't get the mail.
Why would it be sometimes then if you see a certain person post two different posts, the same
now,
exact person, it's two different numbers.
Now, that device may not be your machine. If you dial into the Internet, mm-hmm. the IP address belongs to the modem you connect to at your Internet service provider.
Okay.
So the next person who dials in gets that IP number as well. The next person who dials into that modem.
So the two people could get the same number, and the same person could get two different numbers.
Right.
Same thing happens on DSL and Roadrunner, but not quite as frequently.
Right.
What are the chances of, like, say, people from a different state ending up with the same number?
Not impossible, because they may be
provider.
It depends on who your internet, you're right, an interstate provider.
Like AT&T.
Or AOL.
Okay.
They can shuttle you all over the country before they actually send you out to the real internet.
And that's one of the problems mm-hmm. with national providers is that you end up going longer through the internet pathways before you get to where you want to go.
Where you really want to go.
Yeah.
But the advantage of a national provider is they have phone numbers in other cities if you travel a lot.
Right. Okay, well, thanks an awful lot.
Yeah.
Sure.
Have a good day.
Okay. Okay, our next caller is Fritz from Rochester. Welcome, Fritz. What's your question?
I use Microsoft Access for keeping customer databases and stuff like that.
Sure.
The only thing is how do you save that? Because right now I'm just saving it on my hard drive, and that seems awfully risky. I don't want to have a crash or anything.
Yeah.
There are several files. There's the MDB file, which is the actual database, and then you have all of the table files and all of the link files.
Well, what version of Access are you running?
I'm not sure. It was in Office 2000.
Then everything is in the MDB file.
Yep.
You can copy that. However, there may be an LDB file while you're running the system. That's the lock file. So if you shut down Access, that goes away, and the MDB file can be copied somewhere else.
And then you copy that to a floppy or to a CD? Or
yep. Well, depends
whatever
on how big it is.
On.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Whatever
drive or whatever.
Put it anywhere you like, and I meant that in the nicest way. We are done for another week, and I'd like to thank everybody who called in, apologize to everybody we didn't get to. We'll be back here next Saturday at 12:20. I want to thank Dave Enright, Steve Ray, Rob Linton on the buttons. I'm Nick Francesco. We'll be back next week. God bless America. This is Sound Bites on 1180 WHAM.